all the more reason to stop the introductions and get on with it. Like, nothing kingdom value has ever been accomplished by an introduction. All right, so here's the deal, guys. Nobody ever leads without having to encounter conflict. Nobody's ever led without criticism. Have you figured that out? And there's no such thing as a healthy church that never has any conflict. Churches have conflict, just like marriages and families and communities. Conflict. Conflict is part of relationship. It's normal. It's all about how you deal with it. You got that? It's all about how you deal with it. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about different sources of conflict and how you deal with them. Because the problem is, you can't treat all conflict the same. Because conflict comes from different places, different sources, and it has to be dealt with in different ways. No matter what you're leading, whether you're leading a whole church, or whether you're leading a ministry, or whether you're leading a small group, sooner or later you're going to get some conflict from somebody. Either God will arrange it so you can mature and grow, or the devil will arrange it. And I'm not entirely sure, but I think sometimes the two of them get together. At any rate, conflict is coming. So to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And sometimes churches and ministries don't know how to handle conflict, or they handle it the wrong way, and it can really destroy them. Just like in families. Just like in marriages. But if you understand what's happening and where the conflict is coming from and handle it appropriately, it doesn't have to destroy the ministry or the church that you're leading. So I'm just talking about, let's see, how many do I have in here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 7, as it happens, prime sources of conflict in churches, each of which has to be handled differently. Probably the first source of conflict, one of the most common sources of conflict, is differing visions. Basically, a different vision about where we're going. You can't send the bus to 2 different locations simultaneously. It can only go to 1 location. And the same thing happens in a church or a ministry. It can only go to 1 destination. So ultimately, there's only 1 vision that can prevail. Sometimes we get the idea that we want just everybody who breathes. You're just like desperate for living bodies to fill the seats. But the problem is, some of those people have a different vision for where they want to go or what kind of church they want to be in. You know, like, maybe they like robes and smells and bells and incense and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this isn't it. You know, so they're not going to ever be happy in a place that doesn't have that because they got a different vision. And it's not necessarily that one vision is right and the other one's wrong. Do you understand that? Like, everybody's vision could be right, but that doesn't resolve the conflict. Because you can still only do one within one organization. You only get one. So that can cause conflict because, one person says, we're going this way, and the other person says, no, I don't want to go there. I want to go over here. And there you have conflict. You can't take that conflict and resolve it through any number of meetings. You can bash your head to death with Matthew 18, but you will never resolve that conflict because you have a different vision, and Matthew 18 isn't about that. It's irresolvable. It cannot be solved. The only thing to do is to go different directions. Okay, it's an irresolvable conflict. A different vision. Now, having said that, I would say if you're leading a church, your vision should be big enough to incorporate lots of subvisions within it. You know, it shouldn't be so narrow nobody can agree with it. Okay? But still, it needs to have a defined direction. You know, you can't be everything. You can only really be one thing. So it's important to make that really clear to people up front, especially if you're a new church or you're a smaller church. You have to articulate it very, very clearly, because part of that vision is still unseen. So the words have to carry the freight. Now, like, see, you come to my church. It's an established church. It's 38 years old. There's over 1,000 people there on a weekend. You can, like, see it, you know, in front of you. Although we actually communicate it quite a lot anyway, because we've got lots of new people. And we want them to be able to figure out if they're going to fit here or not as early as possible, just for everybody's benefit. So it's just really important to be very clear about your vision. And if somebody has a different vision, then they need to go somewhere else, is the deal. They just need to go somewhere else. And that's the only solution to the conflict. Second great cause of conflict are what I would call unagreed expectations. All about expectations, which, of course, if you all realize that in relationships, often unagreed or unexpressed expectations are a source of great conflict in just about any kind of relationship. And it's true also in the church. And in fact, it's very common in the church. And two different directions, actually, are super common in churches that both cause conflict. On the one hand, a lot of times people come into the church and they have expectations about what the senior pastor in particular is going to do or be in regards to them. And often it's based on somebody in their past or some hero in their past that they really looked up to and valued in some way, and they want that person to be them. Or sometimes it's they're looking for the senior pastor to fill sort of an unmet need that's never been met. So maybe they have the expectation, you're going to be the father they never had. Or maybe they have the expectation that you're going to be like this great pastor they had back in Chicago. You know, and if you're not like that person, then, you know, that's a problem. And usually it's not expressed. They don't, like, come in and say, like, I want you to be the father I never had. They never, like, tell you that. But that's what's actually going on. And, of course, inevitably what happens is you aren't. You aren't that thing. You aren't like that previous pastor. You're not the father they never had. You don't call them as much as they thought you would. You know, they don't, you know, you're not, like, and sometimes it's just literally mathematically unrealistic. Like, I had one woman in my church one time. She thought, you should be visiting every person in the church in their home at least twice a year to talk to them and be available to them as a senior pastor. And I said, do you have any idea, like, how many people are in the church? You know, like, have you not, like, looked around and kind of counted? I mean, do you realize how many days there are in a year? Like, there's only 365. If I worked every single night of the year, including Christmas, I still couldn't get to all of their houses, even in 1 year. And it would, like, take me 3 years. Like, that's an unrealistic expectation. You know, so I pointed out, like, this is, like, mathematically impossible. It didn't make any difference. She had that expectation. She wanted a pastor that would do that. And I finally decided to say, you know what? You need to go find a really small church where the pastor can do that. You know, no more than 50 people. Because what she wanted was not a leader. She wanted, like, a chaplain, a personal chaplain. Which, in our church, that's a small group leader. But that wasn't good enough. She wanted it to be the top person, but it's like, it's not realistic. So that creates conflict when people like have expectations that you can't meet. And one of the dead giveaways of that happening is when they walk into the meeting with you and they got a list that's 5 pages long of all the ways you don't meet their expectations that they've been saving up for months, which, by the way, is not the biblical way of handling conflict. You're like supposed to deal with it before the sun goes down. You know, like one at a time. But usually what's behind that is basically a whole bunch of expectations that aren't being met and that will probably never be met. And that creates conflict. On the reverse direction, let me just say one more thing on that one. Sometimes maybe you're the person that has the expectations. You know, like you're a leader in the church, and you have expectations about how the person that's leading is going to lead you. And the thing I want to say is it never really works if we are in any organization with the desire to change the leader. You got that? If your desire is to change them into something other than what they are, and that's kind of your expectation, that somehow you're going to get them to change from what they are to something else that you're expecting, that will never work. That's irresolvable. At that point, you really need to leave that place and go find a place where the pastor is already what you're looking for. Instead of like trying to force somebody else into your mold. You need to get out of there. And as long as you stay there, you're going to cause conflict. So you really, if you find yourself in that situation for whatever reason, and it can happen to anybody, you know, then like, you know, you can't have, there's no number of meetings that's going to fix it. Like, you just need to go find the person who's like what you're looking for instead of trying to make this other person push into that mold. On the flip side, bad expectations can go the other direction. In this sense, in the first 8 years of pastoring, so I'm in year 38, in the first 8 years, we had quite a lot of conflicts with our leaders, our sort of lay leaders. And we didn't really know why we were having so many conflicts. But I realized later that what the problem was my expectations about myself, actually. It was my expectations on me that was causing conflicts with them. How does that happen? Here's how that happens. I thought that it was my job to make sure that nobody made any mistakes. All right. That, like, they didn't make any mistakes. That's what good pastoring meant, was to, like, be involved in people's lives in such a way that they never make any mistakes. Well, if you think that's what your job is, and that was sort of the expectation I had on myself, what you're going to become is over-controlling. You're going to be too controlling. You're going to, like, be, you know. And the interesting thing is that the more you try to press in to keep people from making mistakes, the more determined they become to make a mistake. Just to kind of show you who's boss. And so then that makes conflict. And you know, it used to be like we blamed them, you know, like, well, they have a problem with authority figures and they never resolve their issues with their father, blah, 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 blah. But in the end, eventually, I realized, no, this one was mine. This was a result of my expectations on myself. That finally God got to me and says, look, I let you make mistakes. Why don't you let them? Besides which, mistakes are God's main way for us to grow. So since that time, I've created a church where we have a culture of making mistakes. Like we want to make mistakes and learn from them. Instead of like trying to prevent mistakes, we're like trying to encourage mistakes. It's like flip the whole, and you know the funny thing about that is all the conflicts went away. Just like that. I mean, all of those kind of conflicts just went because it was all about an expectation that I was kind of having on myself that was kind of driving me into a place that really wasn't even where I belonged. It wasn't my job. You see what I mean? And I'm just kind of crossing into their territory, really, in a sense, in terms of their right to take responsibility for their own life and to learn and grow with Jesus as an adult. I was like crossing that territory, and that made conflicts. And that was because of my own expectations. So bad expectations on both sides can create conflict. Again, those kinds of issues, sometimes it helps to realize that that we have those expectations, but they're not usually resolved by talking to each other. It's more resolved by talking to God and letting God shine the light on what is actually happening inside of you. Like, where are these expectations coming from? And what's causing that? Because that was resolved for me, like when God spoke to me and made it really clear, like I was approaching this whole thing from the wrong direction and putting myself under expectations that weren't realistic. As soon as I repented with God, that solved it, you see. So, and sometimes, when other people have other expectations on me, even though they usually can't even say, this is my expectation on you, like I've been around long enough, like I know what's happening. I'll just say, look, I know what you're looking for and I can't do it. Here's what I can do. And if you can live with that, we can do this. But if you can't live with that, then you should go somewhere else. Because this is what I can do. I understand my job pretty well at this point. So that's one. Number three. What I would call structural friction. This is actually the first recorded conflict that ever happened in the church. In Acts chapter 6 is the first conflict that happens in church. Like, people who think that the book of Acts is all sweetness and light haven't read it very carefully. So the very first conflict in the church happens in Acts 6, and it's a structural problem. Because you see, what happens is, churches that are growing come to certain points where their structure can't keep up with their size. All right, your ability to service the number of people that are involved becomes maxed. And all of a sudden, whatever you had set up in terms of structures and leaderships and systems doesn't work. And what that means is people are getting hurt. People are getting overlooked. People are running into each other. And it creates friction. It's like the tires on your car seizing up. It just starts creating a lot of friction, a lot of heat, and conflict. And that's what happened in Acts 6. The church had grown a lot, and all of a sudden they like had way too many people that they were trying to service in terms of giving out food than they had the ability to manage. The apostles couldn't keep up. They couldn't do it all. And it caused a big conflict in the church. Now, a lot of times what happens is when we run into those, the first sign of the conflict is people who are like having problems start like going to the leaders and trying to treat it like it's a personal issue between them. And it ends up being really frustrating for everybody. Because they'll say all the right things, and they'll say, "Yeah, we're good friends, we're reconciled," but it actually doesn't fix anything. The basic problem remains, and so that you keep having this thing pricking at you. It's still not working. And so what they did, of course, in the book of Acts, is they added a whole other level of leadership. They changed the structure, added a whole other level of leadership, put a whole bunch of guys in place who took a bunch of stuff off of the apostles that they couldn't keep up with anymore and put them in charge. And then it says the church was at peace again. So sometimes just the failure to readjust our leadership and our structure to keep up with the size that we have creates conflict that can only be resolved by making the adjustment. So if you're a growing church and you start all of a sudden finding that the things that used to work are not working, they start breaking down. It's like, like your car all of a sudden just has something wrong with it, and it just keeps having one problem after the other. It's like friction in the whole organism. It's sort of like a body that starts running a fever. That's your first sign, like it's time to reorganize, basically. You have to reorganize. Usually that solves it. A fourth one would be what I would call like the inability to articulate personal need. So the thing about it is that a lot of people in church feel discomfort at certain points, but they actually aren't self-aware enough or aren't mature enough to be able to express why they're feeling what they're feeling or where it's coming from. They don't know how to put words to the discomfort that they feel, and so they just start guessing at things. They start kind of lashing out at people around them because they feel discomfort. But they can't actually like put their finger. They can't like say the words, of why they're discomfort. So they just like start making people miserable around them, and it creates conflict. So like, one time I had this guy. He comes up to me and he says, and you know this is typical. Like 10 minutes before I'm getting up to preach, I'm leaving this church. This church isn't loving anymore. I'm leaving the church. Okay, we'll talk right after the sermon. You know, they love to give that to you just 10 minutes beforehand. I don't know what they're thinking, but, you know, sort of like, that's a good time. And so I get to him. I'm talking, I'm like, what? This church is not a loving church? He says, yeah, I'm leaving. It's just not a loving church. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, you know, I got several things going through my mind. I mean, on the one hand, I'm thinking, like, I could probably give you a dozen examples of where people, like, were heroically sacrificial in serving and loving one another in the last 2 weeks. But then I realized, like, this is not really, like, an abstract debate going on here. This is not, like, some, you know, what he's saying is, I don't feel loved. You see what I mean? This is personal discomfort here. So then I look at him and I'm thinking, the guy's a little bit socially awkward. I says, are you trying to tell me that you're having trouble finding friends? And he just crumples. He says, yeah, oh, yeah, that's it. I'm having trouble finding friends. He just couldn't say that. And so then I said, well, who have you tried to be friends with? Well, he named, like, all the most popular, most, you know, I already have 5 times as many friends as I can manage people in the church. I said, well, you know, did it ever occur to you that most people can only manage being friends with about 40 or 50 people total? And that after that, they don't have enough time left over for any new friends? He says, no, I never thought about that. I said, did it ever occur to you that maybe those people are, like, filled up? Like, they don't have any room for any new friends? He says, no. But I see what you mean. Yeah, they probably don't. And I said, well, like, why don't you try to be friends with some people who, like, need friends? Some people who aren't filled up. And then we talked a little bit about how to be friends with people, how to find those people, and how you could be a friend. And he says, yeah, I could do that. And he walks away saying, this is a great church. I love this church. So, you know, as leaders, sometimes we have to listen for what the real question is, not the one that they say. Because they can't always say what the real thing is, for whatever reason. You know, and so we got to listen for what the real thing is. Because if we can figure out what the real thing is, sometimes it's a simple little thing that probably you could help them with, and then they're fine. You see, so it's sort of like, I've gotten to where, you know, particularly people who aren't leadership type people, you know, not people who are like, are super self-aware, if they're like coming, you know, I'm assuming like they're trying to tell me they're in pain of some sort, or something's not working for them, and we'll try to figure out what that is and why they're having trouble. But not get into a debate about whether the church is loving or not, because that's really not going to be helpful. Okay, so sometimes we get in conflicts because of that. Sometimes we have conflicts because of differing judgment calls. So this is one of the second big conflict in the church in Acts was a theological conflict, which kind of goes back to vision. It was the whole conflict over Jews and Gentiles, which was a really big conflict. But the third conflict was a conflict between Paul and Barnabas, who were actually on the same side of the Jew-Gentile fight. You know, they were on the same side. They were co-workers. But they had a disagreement about a particular person named John Mark. Because John Mark went with them on their first missionary journey, and he abandoned them. It was too hard. It was a rough go, and he couldn't take it, and he went home. And so they're getting ready to go again. Barnabas, who is ever the one who believes in everyone's potential. I think if any of us would have had a favorite apostle in those days, it would absolutely have been Barnabas. He was everybody's friend. I mean, the man was a great man. And he still believed in John Mark, even though John Mark really messed up big time. But Paul did not. He was not going to put up with that kind of nonsense. And they couldn't agree about John Mark. And it was a judgment call. It's a judgment call. But sometimes we don't agree about judgment calls. And so they ended up splitting up their team because they couldn't agree on the judgment call. Nobody could back down. They split over the judgment call. And inevitably in leadership, there are some times where you have to make judgment calls. And you might disagree. And the interesting thing about that one is they split up because they didn't disagree. But then later on, guess who won the argument? Long run. Barnabas. John Mark ends up back on Paul's team at the end. You know, he comes around. Barnabas spends some more time with him, trains him a little bit more, invests him a little bit more, and he comes around, and then he ends up back on Paul's team. So, in the end, Barnabas was the better judge of character. But it took a lot of time for that to be shown. It took time for that to happen. So, in church, of course, we have to make similar kinds of judgment call. Who's the right person? Who's our best worship leader? You know, you got a couple of people, but one of them's got to like take the lead. Who's it going to be? Right? You got to pick somebody. And it's a judgment call. And that just might cause some conflict because somebody else would have called that one different. And I think there's a few choices when that happens. You can take the Paul and Barnabas choice, which is, all right, we're just going to go different directions. But it does seem kind of like a stupid thing to split over. I don't know, to me at least. It seems like, really? You're going to split over that? Especially when they end up agreeing in the end? Although I think maybe God was in on that because that way he got two teams going out instead of one. So maybe God was like putting his finger on. Sometimes I think God like puts his finger on the way, you know, and just like makes it come this way. Like I always tell churches, you can do it the Vineyard way, like the voluntary church plant where you send people out and you get credit for it, or you can do it the Southern Baptist way where you have a